And welcome back in another edition of Stripe Show Podcast. Hope you're having a great week. I know this gentleman next to me is having a terrific week because he's back to his old ways again. One of his pupils back in the winner's circle once again. I can't even imagine how many wins this man has had with his students since he's been teaching on the lesson tee. One of the greats of all time. And he's joining us here today on the podcast, Mr. David Ledbetter. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thanks, Travis. Thanks for the nice introduction, too. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, this is an honor. You and I have done some things over the years, had some conversations about the game of golf, the golf swing, the ever-changing of the sport. And one of your guys, Patrick Reed, that you started working with a while back, pretty impressive there. Farmers Insurance Open, five-shot win, and he looks like he's pretty poised here to have a big season. You know, we know he can putt, we know his short game is good, but his full swing, what you've been working on, seems to be moving in the right direction. He seems optimistic.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, he had a great record prior to coming to see us, and so I mean, he obviously was with his longtime coach Kevin Kirk, and Everything's an evolution. We know that. I mean, sometimes you need a fresh set of eyes, you need some different input, and so on. And so obviously they had a great time. So we looked at it, and you know, interesting enough, I mean, look, we know. I mean, I would say when you look at Patrick, I mean, his short game. I mean, when you take all department, so we say chipping, putting, bunker play, pitching. I mean, I don't think there's anybody better overall. I mean, there may be maybe better players in each individual area, but overall, you put it all together, I doubt it. I mean, because it's amazing. He's got, you know, we call him Magic Hands, and I think Magic Hands actually helped him with the rest of his game for the most part. You know, I mean, we've essentially, you know, I looked at it and just wondered, okay, do I want to take on this task? But then I looked at it and I thought, you know, this guy, he's determined. I mean, he's got, I mean, an amazing mindset as far as he just wants to win.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about the money. It's just all about trophies. And he said, look, I've just been, you look at my stats over the last few years. And it's true. I mean, he really, as good a short game as he had, I mean, he actually wasn't inside the top 100 in any year since he's turned pro. Essentially, where he was in either fairways hit or greens in regulation. So look at that, if you can sharpen up that part of the game. And essentially, you know, we've sort of tried to take the curve out of the shots, a lot more curve out of it. And as I said, you know, look, it's, I noticed Brandel Chamblee saying, oh, well, you know, why did you go and see David? Because it's a power game now. So, you know, it's all about power. Which is nonsense. I mean, you know, it's not all about power. I mean, not everybody's going to be a Bryson DeChambeau, and maybe with the new rulings that the USGA and RNA are bringing in, it might not be about power in the future. But the thing is, you know, essentially the great players throughout history have been great iron players. And to me, if Patrick was able to somehow, you know, hit his iron shots closer, because if that guy gets inside 10 feet, I mean, watch out, you know. So,
yeah.
So, you know, so that's essentially what we're working, you know, worked on. And, you know, we've done a few little different things, and you know, my instincts and my eye over the years, having worked with so many great players, you know, we came up with a plan, and so the plan is something we're sticking at, and it's still a work in progress. It's not he's not the finished article by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, he's seen enough good stuff over the last few weeks, and obviously this week. I mean, yes, I mean, his short game was top notch, but he still under pressure, hit a tremendous number of good shots, a lot of great wedge shots, full wedge shots, but not chip shots or pitch shots. And so yeah, it's been a lot of fun working with him. And I say, I just think that the potential for this guy to, look, he wants to be number one. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
Well, that's his quest.
Right.
And so I think, I mean, with that guy's short game, and if we can get his long game up to parity, I mean, it's like, whoa, watch out.
Yeah. I would imagine as a coach, like you said, you're sitting here, you're thinking, do I want to take this on? You know, and you're like, man, God, the guy can really putt. He's got a great short game. He can be a little erratic, you know, with his ball striking. But to your point, it's like, if we can just dial that in a little bit, I mean, this guy, who knows, the ceiling could be really high. Yes, he is giving up some distance. I mean, he's in that 290-yard range. But if he can be in the upper third of ball striking, I mean, who knows? Just how good Patrick Reed can be. Let me ask you this, David. I see him doing the drill a lot, and I heard the comments you referred to, you know, with Randall, and I also heard him talk about, you know, he's doing this drill and, you know, playing golf swing versus, you know, going out and playing. But I know it's a drill, and Patrick using it to probably to kind of do some discovery and then just go out and off he goes, right, and plays the game. And we know with Patrick, he's going to play the game. I mean, he is as mentally tough as I've ever seen, next to Tiger. I mean, really. I mean, over the years, the guy can take on so much pressure. It's incredible. But he's doing this drill, David. I want to ask you. And to me, it looks like perhaps he's changing, you know, the left wrist condition a little bit, where he's trying to flex it or flatten out a little, and then, you know, and then just turn. Versus, you know, historically, maybe he had a little more cup or extension in the wrist, which could lead to a little more hands or flip, however you want to look at that impact. Is that accurate when he's doing the drill, or is it kind of something different?
It appears that way, but you know, I mean, I know a lot of the guys obviously are going for this sort of the Dustin look, and I'm not a huge fan of it, to be perfectly frank. I think for some players, I mean, I think somebody like maybe even a Jordan Spieth, I don't think it's been the best approach. I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, if you ask me who has one of the best positions up top there, I would tell you Henrik Stenson. Because I love that neutral position, you know. Although I say, look, it's worked. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you can go back to Trevino or Palmer, but those shut-faced players actually, maybe. I mean, hey, who cares these days? I mean, they're making millions of dollars, and you know, if they retire at 40, then that's fine. But then, you know, if you look at Trevino and Palmer, they didn't have lengthy careers because it's a strong man's move. That so with Patrick, getting back to Patrick now. It appears that way. We've made a grip change. Essentially, we've got the club face. He feels that way at times just because we're getting the club face in a more neutral, to him, what feels slightly closed. He's always been a very open-faced player. You know, he fanned it open going back, and then he basically fanned it closed coming through, and there's a lot of forearm and wrist rotation through impact. So we've sort of tried to calm the face down to a large extent. And he feels, actually, he doesn't feel it in his left wrist more than in his right wrist, trying to sort of almost hold that angle at the back of the right wrist where it, so the club face, everything is all about the club face. To me, it's like so much of the golf swing, you can relate back to the club face and what players do in order to get the club face back on the ball, right? And so the interesting thing is that's the first thing we looked at. Let's get that club. Well, we worked on posture. I mean, we worked on a number of things. And now I'm a big believer in drills and exercises in order to sort of enhance the feel for the swing. I mean, we don't want to play golf swing out there. We understand. I mean, it's a little bit more technical maybe at times, but he's a great one to be able to compartmentalize things and be able to sort of just put that stuff aside. And he said, listen, David, he said, look, I can get the ball around regardless. I just want to know I'm working the right direction. And one of the things you look, I mean, he's always had that sort of cuppy look at the top, the face would get open coming down. And so we worked on sort of shortening the backswing somewhat, getting the arm plane flatter, getting it more compact, getting the face in a more neutral position so he could actually use his body to rotate through rather than, you know, I mean, say you get that club, I mean, you talk about cup, you know, the face being open at the top, well, it was really open coming down. And so you'd have to sort of force the forearms to sort of work overtime. And, you know, as a consequence, you know, he'd sort of hit this pull draw, you know, where you aim, honestly, 20, 30 yards right at times. I mean, and we know, you know, in order to fade, he had that big sort of helicopter finish. And I said, you know, that's one thing we're going to get rid of, Patrick. And he said, no, we're not. I said, yes, we are. You watch. You haven't seen him with it lately, you know. He's
no.
Some beautiful little fades this week without that sort of funky finish. So, you know, it's a work in progress, you know. And so we're doing it little by little. And it, you know, I mean, when I worked with Sir Nick Faldo back in the day, I mean, it was like a 2-year plan what we worked on. You can't do that these days. I mean, you got to work things while they're playing, while they're working at things, you know. So,
is it almost like
you know, it's one of those things that it's as I say, he's he's very excited about it. You can see, yes, you can see the progress. And, you know, with a player like him, who's super, super confident and believes in himself, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what he's going to do in the next few years.
I got to ask you an honest question when, as a teacher, because I was, you know, like, you know, when you're working with players and sometimes as a teacher and you look at it and you're so for certain on where you want to go and how you want to do it. And then sometimes you get in there and you do it and the player pushes back, right? Or, yeah, or something else happens where he's just not getting it. And sometimes, well, the club face, as you know, David, can be a delicate thing, right? Like,
sure,
you go in there and all of a sudden you close that face a little earlier coming down, and the player's so used to it being open, you know, and now all of a sudden they're hitting hooks or whatever, right? And right, they kind of start losing their way and they get caught in between. How nervous do you get, or do you get nervous? That's probably not the right word, but when you start yeah, right? I mean, yeah, it's real. Like, I felt it. I can only imagine how many times you felt it with all the great players you've worked with and have helped. Like, you get in there and you get in those trenches and you really don't know, do you? I mean, it's just, you're hoping that it pans out and they start to come out on the other side quickly, but sometimes it takes longer.
Yeah. Obviously every case is different. Yeah. You know, look, who would think, okay, so here's a Masters champion, a guy's won a World Golf Championship. The first thing we did was change his grip. And you think, what? I mean, surely this guy must have a good grip, right?
Yeah.
But once he understood, I mean, we actually weakened his right hand, believe it or not, not strengthened it. We weakened his right hand to actually get the club face, what he felt. You'll see him in his little rehearsals, you know, similar to a Justin Thomas. Justin sort of almost rotates the face going back, and then he actually doesn't do it when he swings it, and he sort of has a look at it, you know, that sort of little look that, you know, Mike Weir used to do years ago.
Yeah.
And still does. I mean, a lot of players are doing that now. It's almost like the modern waggle, shall we say.
Right.
And if you look at Patrick now, he sort of gets it into sort of almost an ultra shut position there, right? Because, you know, his was a, you know, I'm not a big believer in, you know, the old theory of, okay, well, when it's parallel to the ground, the toe must be straight up and down. You know, that's gone by the wayside now. And so, you know, so Patrick really is feeling, I mean, he's the face position. I just knew looking at him, look, if we can somehow get his face in position, his body movement's going to change. His release pattern's going to change. So it was all about the face. And so I was pretty confident really that we were on the right track, and he could see the interesting initially. Okay. This is funny to say. Okay. So the first tournament he went to play in was, the PGA at Wentworth. We'd had a solid week. Then he went out of there with my associate, Sean Hogan. Sean was with him because I wanted to keep him on track and say, okay, we're going to do this every day. But we actually, believe it or not, we got him to use his old grip with his short game, because I was so worried that, you know, that with this new grip that he would actually get, because, you know, he's one of those players with a short game. He gets the face opening beautifully and then clips everything. I mean, hardly takes a divot with anything, even off the, you know, off the tightest lie, or even off the into the grain. It's just a clip, right? And so he uses the bounce perfectly. So we had to figure out. I mean, the first week it was quite interesting. He said, "Geez, I've got two grips going, one for my short game and one for my long game." And we left it like that because, as I say, you know, he tried with the new grip. He tried with the short game. He got the face shut, and he's never used to be playing from a slightly shut club face, right? Yeah. So, you know, these are things as coaches and teachers, you sort of have to sort of mix and match a little bit there. Yeah. And, you know, there's a little, as you know there, Travis, I mean, it's instinct, it's experience, and it's some trial and error as well. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's like, you don't hit on everything the first time, and especially the way that you communicate things. But, you know, a lot of people ask me, how do you know what you're going to work on with a player? And, you know, I had to think about that, you know, a few years ago. And I came to the conclusion, you know, what I do, I'm pretty visual, and I actually see a swing in my mind, how I think that person could or should swing, and how the ball's going to react. So it's not, you know, forget 3D analysis, et cetera, and track man. It's like, I just see in my mind how I think this person could or should swing. And it's like, my good friend JJ Rave, who's one of the world's leading biomechanists, says, "You're very lucky, David." I said, "Why is that, JJ?" He said, "Well, you have biomechanical eyes." And I said, "Oh, okay, whatever that means." So, but, you know, it's you know, the fact is you sort of try to piece things together and you look, you know, golf swing's an amazing movement when you think about it. And it's like, you know, that you think of the stuff that's been written over the years. I mean, my goodness, about something which is relatively simple. We're still trying to diagnose and figure out what's going on. And we've got all the technical tools in the world now to try to do that. And it's still somewhat of a mystery, let's face it. You know, to hit on the right thing and to be able to get through to that player. Because remember, if they stand on the practice tee is one thing, and being able to carry it out into the golf course is completely another.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I think you hit it on the head. There's still some mystery in it, but you just never know until you get in there and you start moving things around, and then the player has an opinion and they push back or they agree, and the ball has to respond. And there's just a lot of moving parts. It's so funny you said that, because my next question was, you know, how has changing the face affected the short game? Clearly it hasn't, but you're saying that he kind of goes back to the other grip around the green.
He did initially.
Oh, he did, but initially.
He's sort of got the one grip going now. We figured out, okay, how he can actually sort of create the same face position with his new grip. So, but the first week it was just too much going on to sort of try to throw that in. So it was just interesting that he did that at Wimbledon. He finished third. I mean, he had a good chance of winning it. That's always a good sign, you know, when somebody can play with what they're working on. I remember when we first started working with Lydia Ko, I mean, she won first tournament straight out the box. And we actually worked on her face position too. And that was the first thing we did. And I'm a big believer in that the face, well, ultimately controlled everything. And some players are shut face players, some players are more open face players. And, you know, how you get the club coming back into impact is what it's all about.
I had it wrong. When I was watching the rehearsals, you know, he's feeling it more in the right hand, and I was saying he's probably feeling a little more flexion, but he's feeling the right hand more bent. But that's countered with the grip. That's countered with the grip change, and then the lead arm kind of a little more around him, and all of a sudden the face is a little bit more closed. He's not consciously flexing the wrist at all.
No, not at all. But it's like, you know, there's more of a pushing sensation getting that club face, you know, rather than it sort of coming in sort of in that. I mean, you know, if you was going to hit like a little flop shot where you sort of open the face and slide the club under, I mean, that's why I said to him, I said that's why you had such a good short game, because every shot you hit basically was the same approach. I mean, with that open face and then somehow try to close it down with the full swing. And that's, you know, it's very, very interesting. And the great thing about it is that his body movement is starting to work. As a result, his body is starting to move up to the ball now, rather than hang back and spin out and flip the forearm. So, you know, you can see through impact, we're trying to get where the right hand is sort of hanging on to that angle longer. So he's starting to see it. It's interesting. He's not putting as much spin on his wedge shots now either. There's a little less spin that he's able to get the club releasing better. So, it's all sort of, you know, it's interesting how it's sort of coming together. I mean, look, it's still early days.
The players who do have a little more extension in that left wrist and are comfortable with that, I think of Mickelson. I think of Ernie Els, who you know a thing or two about. These guys have good hands. They have soft hands, right? And they know how to slide the club head past the ball. And Patrick, I don't think there's anybody better than him in letting that club head pass. And to your point, clip it, not take a divot. I mean, he had some just incredible shots, you know, on Sunday. That the bunker shots were great. That one, I can't remember, in the front, super tight lot. I mean, it was a little hanging, and there was no grass under it. You know, it almost looked a little muddy, and it was just like, oh.
Yeah. No, he's a genius around the green.
He is.
Yeah, I mean, really is. And so, I mean, when you have a player who has those assets, that if they can get confidence in their long game, and say that's the exciting thing for me, because I say this guy, plus with his attitude. I mean, his attitude is like, you know, it's amazing. I mean, he just doesn't believe he can't do anything. You know, and it's like he's okay. You know, I'm ready for it. Let's go. You know, throw it at me. And so. So a little bit like, say, his same attitude as in the early days as Nick Faldo and actually even Nick Price. I mean, there's a certain attitude that these great players have, that they just know that they what they've got within themselves in order to, you know, to get to where they want to get to.
Patrick, the student, right? As since you've get to know him, you guys work now. You guys did a few things at the U.S. Open, right?
Post U.S. Open, we really started the week. He flew down on the Monday after U.S. Open. Yeah, okay. He was leading after two rounds, and then sort of blew it the last couple of rounds. And he's quite confident, saying, you know, if I had what I had now, I would have won that thing by five shots.
You know? So you guys have known each other for a while, Patrick, the student. That he's out there, he's ready to go. Is he all ears, where he's just gonna do what you want him to do, or is he? Because you want to know why you're telling him to do it.
No, he wants to know why. He's very curious and inquisitive, and definitely wants to know why. But once he understands it, he's full throttle. I mean, that's which is good. I mean, you know, you get a lot of players that, you know, I mean, okay, you can question to a point, but you can't question every single thing that the coach is going to suggest to you, because otherwise you're never going to get anything accomplished.
But you never had any of those, have you?
He's pretty clear on what he wants to do. Yeah. And that's what we've tried to do. We've tried to create sort of a blueprint for him, for a plan, because to me, that's really important going forward. It's like you can't just react to every day. And as we said, look, you're going to have good days and bad days. There's going to be times where, yeah, you're going to be overdrawing, or it's not coming back the way you want it to, or you know your fade's not working, or this is not a perfect game, we know that, and but it's one of those things which is a great study from my standpoint. It's really interesting because I say he's a very interesting character, and I honestly think that he could really achieve some amazing things. Let's say, you know, assuming he stays healthy and we still hit it off, which we seem to at this point in time. And I'm probably old enough that he sort of listens to me and thinking, oh, well, he's got a little bit of experience here. It's fun. That's a great thing. I mean, look, you know yourself. Look, it's rewarding when you coach and you teach, isn't it? I always said from way back in the day, it's the next best thing to actually doing it yourself, you know, I mean, yeah, would I have liked to have been a great player? Absolutely. But I mean, this is the next best thing. And if you can play a little role in these players' careers, it's exciting. I mean, sure, is it good for business? I suppose over the years, absolutely. You know, sure. You get the recognition and one thing and another. Yep. But, you know, for the most part, it's that sort of reward that you have. Yeah, okay, like we're working. And it's a team thing, you know, I mean, it's not... Yeah, you know, we've got other people involved too, from a nutritionist, you know, that he's starting to work with now, which sounds interesting with Patrick, because, you know, his diet was not necessarily the greatest in the world. You know, I'm a bit of a health nut. So, you know, I said, well, listen, you know, I can't tell the difference between your breakfast, lunch and dinner, actually, chump. So, you know, let's figure out what you're going to eat on the golf course. And so he's all ears. And he says, look, I just want to get better in every area. And so even from a workout standpoint, we're sort of getting him into a sort of a workout plan. And so just little things. I mean, he's not going to be like Bryson, having 9 protein shakes a day or anything, but just little things in different areas as a coach, because I've always felt that, look, it's the holistic approach to coaching, right? It's not just the one element. And as a coach, you try to find experts in their field to sort of help your students along.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, as we kind of transition a little bit from Patrick now, just a couple questions just about coaching in general as you see it on the tour. I mean, it's a very different landscape now than it was, say, 25 years ago. You've been out there for a long time with a very long list of players. There's just so much available now. There's so much, information, and there's so many just quote unquote specialists, and there's a lot of resources, right, available. Yeah. And it feels like the shelf life of coaches and players is getting shorter, and you know, it's just part of the business. You know, people are moving around trying to gain an edge and this and that. You know, what's your attitude now as you take on a player? And has it changed, you know, say over the last 25 years? You said something here that really registered with me. It's you don't have 2 years, right? Like maybe you did 25 years ago where you had a little longer runway to have an impact with the player, where now you feel the pressure as a coach that you don't. Is that accurate as far as like, you know, fitting into your overall attitude and your approach to a player now that comes up to you, say, hey, can I have some help? How do you approach it?
Well, you always realize probably nothing's forever. I mean, you know, it's probably like a player caddy relationship. You know, you've seen players and caddies, you know, whether it be Phil and Bones or, you know, obviously Tiger's, you know, we know his history with caddies and he's kept them for a long time. And it's like, but you've seen players and caddies change and you've seen players and coaches change. I mean, there's a lot of good coaches out there now. There's basically, you know, a lot of people with a lot of knowledge and, it is one of those things that, you know, players look, it's human nature, right? You want to get better and you think that maybe this player or this coach, maybe I'd like to get some more information. I mean, it's interesting. You look at Victor Hovland. I mean, I don't think he has a full-time coach. I think he gets all his information on YouTube or just chats with different people and gets little bits of information, tidbits here and there, you know? So I'm not sure if he has a full-time coach or not, but the rumor has it he doesn't. But
I think he's working with Jeff. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, that was the story for a while. Anyhow. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of, as I say, it's nothing forever. You know, I mean, people do surprise you, whether it be a Lydia Ko, who was number one in the world and had the best record in golf, really, and, you know, wanted to make a change. I mean, you think, well, why would you want to do that? But that's human nature. People want to make a change, they make a change. Sometimes it's for the better, sometimes it's for the worse, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's, I hear what you're saying, and it's like, look, all you can do as a coach is like, you give it 100%. Mm-hmm. You hope that that helps the player, but that's what we're out there to do, right? We're out there to help, to be able to assist in order to help a player to reach their goals. And it's, you know, the times where things need freshening up, and whether it be with, you know, Kevin Kirk, not that he became a bad coach overnight. It's like, hey, want to hear something different, you know?
Right.
So, you know, it's just one of those, it's a tricky profession these days because people, you know, there's lots of coaches around there. I think, you know, some coaches, I think there are some young coaches personally who might not have the experience, and you get hold of a track man and you think, okay, well, I can actually teach everybody now. I know all about it. And it's like, but look, I mean, as you did, look, I came up through the trenches, right? I mean, I taught, you know, club golfers and still do. So I never had the advantage of videos. I had instinct that I could use. And so a lot of times this technology can actually not allow a coach to use their instincts. I mean, one of the things we do with our teachers, you know, we have got, obviously you've got 35 academies with about 120 registered coaches, and say, hey, some of the times I don't want you to teach with video or TrackMan or any technology. You're just going to go there and eyeball it. Can you do that? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the greatest teachers of all time was John Jacobs. And, you know, here's a guy that, I mean, if you read it, say, wow, there's no depth to that material that he puts out. But yet again, you know, there was a guy that could, I mean, he helped tour players, he helped, you know, average golfers, beginners. I mean, and so he didn't even use video. So it's like, you know, so, I mean, as a coach, I mean, we look, having the knowledge, and whether it be from an anatomy, whether it be just understanding physics, whether it be, you know, understanding the basics of biomechanics. I mean, yeah, there's a lot out there, but ultimately, what do we need all that information for? So we can actually teach in a simple manner. I mean, it seems to be that in many respects, you know, that teaching has got way more complex than it ever was in the past, and people actually have less time to play and practice. I mean, look, if you're talking about, you know, top level players or top juniors or college players or tour players or whatever, mini tour players, doesn't matter, at that level, fine. But I mean, the masses out there are still need something just to sort of, hey, how do I get an airborne? How do I fix my flight? How do I, you know, maybe hit it 5 yards good? How do I improve my putting? So, I mean, we're going to look at it that, you know, most coaches and teachers, I mean, I remember being at a seminar and they wanted to know all the ins and outs of sort of the, the finer touches of teaching a tour player. I said, well, how many people here teach anybody under a 4 handicap? You know, and it's like 2 people put their hands up. And I said, well, you know, that's, it's all well and good, but you know, you're teaching a different language. You're not going to, you know, watching Dustin Johnson hit balls is not going to help Mrs. Haversack play better golf.
It's true. And I think there's no substitute for the experience of getting in there and the trial and error and learning from it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the exciting thing for me. You keep learning and you learn different ways of communicating and saying things. So, you know, I never poo-poo anybody else's instruction. I might have certain preferences and I might say, that's iffy. But I remember, you know, back in the day, okay, this is going back a ways, okay, you know, one of the most popular teachers for a period of time was Jimmy Ballard, right? So Jimmy Ballard, a pretty, you know, he had a... connection and move off the ball and, you know, and it's like, you know, people were looking at that and saying, wow, how the heck, you know, that's never going to work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he had a lot of his thoughts and theories and he helped a lot of players, especially people like Hal Sutton and Curtis Strange. I mean, at the time were, you know, 2 of the best players out there. So, you know, you never say never because I say there's always different ways of doing things. And we realized, you know, I gave a lesson to a guy today and he's very good friends with Tom Weisskopf, who sadly is pretty ill at the moment. But I mean, if you go back in the day, I mean, you know, Gary Player will tell you Tom Weisskopf was probably had more natural talent to strike a golf ball than even, his great friend and foe, Jack Nicklaus, you know. Yep. And, you know, he had a certain trait to his swing, you know, as they did back in the 70s and 80s, early 80s, you know, the big reverse C and high finish and, you know, one thing or another. So things change, things evolve. And, you know, we as coaches and teachers, we must evolve and look at all the things that are out there. And you know, I mean, when I first came to the States, I went to a teaching seminar that PJ put on and Gary Wyron, who, you know,
golf light laws.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gary, I mean, you know, he ran the PGA education department. Yeah. And we who dare teach must never cease to learn. And that always struck home with me. And so it struck a chord with me because it's like, and that's true. Never close your mind because look at things and say, because, you know, you're never going to be all things to all people as a coach.
No.
Okay, so some people like what you say, some people dislike what you say. All you can do is 100% try to be as open-minded as you can, learn as much as you can, and see if you can help as many people as you can.
Yep. You know, I over the last couple of years since leaving the Golf Channel, I've been able to build a pretty good following and platform, and I get some younger teachers coming up to me, and they say, hey, I really like your content, your videos, you know, what's your secret? And I said, well, the first thing I think you have to understand is who is your audience? You know, who do you want to speak to? You know, and then start speaking to them in a way that they can understand what you're trying to do. I think most teachers are speaking to other teachers, you know? So I think when they publish stuff, whatever it is, I think there's always that level of dialogue that's to other teachers. You know, I always just, my deal is when I post stuff, I'm speaking to amateurs, you know, so it can come across a bit at times, maybe vanilla or simple to other teachers that they've defined it. And I'm okay with that. Right. Because I don't need to layer in that level of complexity into these videos and articles in 3D or TrackMan, because I know that the average player, like, they're just like, what? You know, and the sexiness is only to the other teachers to prove that, yeah, I know what that means or how that works. I think we get caught up in that a little bit. And that's just today's world with the platforms and, you know, but I say, like, know who your audience is and then go speak to them. And the beauty of social media and where I live and make my business in is that I call it the 85%, David, 85%. They're not going to show up on your lesson tee or mine and take a lesson, but they love golf. They want to be entertained and they want to learn a little bit. And that's kind of how I package, you know, all of my stuff is to the 85%. And then also speaking to the other 15 who want to purchase a lesson or whatever. So it's a big, rich market there to go get, but I think you have to find your voice and you have to go, you have to be willing to go down that lane. My goal has never been to teach tour players. I've done a little bit in the past, but I've just never really, it just never motivated me. They made me too wacky. You know, like I found myself like, I don't even know how you do it. I can't even think about anything else when a player is playing. Like my kid could be standing there, you know, with his hair on fire. I'm not even sure I would know because I'm looking at my phone and, oh my God, he just bogeyed the ninth. You know, wow. You know how it is, right?
Yeah, being there, done that. Yeah.
It's crazy. All right, last thing. It had to feel pretty good for Patrick to win, to stick it in there and needle Brandel just a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, look, Brandel, I mean, I used to coach Brandel, so I know Brandel pretty well. And, you know, look, he in some ways, he's very good for the game. He's very opinionated, but I just don't. I think it's almost like a personal vendetta, you know, which to me is totally wrong. I mean, look, for a start, he doesn't really know Patrick Reed personally. He doesn't know his upbringing. And the fact is, okay, you know, to actually basically blatantly call him a cheat is just pathetic, in my opinion. I mean, which is really what he did. And he went on and on and on and on and on, you know, and it's like, he tried to make himself feel good or sound better or make himself sound educated to his audience. I have no idea. But to me, to carry on like that, it's like, you know what? It's like, in the end, Patrick did nothing wrong. Okay. All right. Hey, he played exactly by the rules. Okay. So intent. Okay. Well, he said, it's the intent. Okay. Where's intent in the rule book? Where's intent when 25 people helped to push a boulder so Tiger had a shot in the desert in Phoenix? I mean, that's intent, right? I know. If it's intent, you shouldn't be able to move that boulder. Okay. So, I mean, you know, he moved it. So he played within the rules. I mean, it's like, you know, to go on and on and on and on about this. And the fact is that it took away from the golf. I mean, when you think in terms of, like, even, you know, on CBS on Sunday, I mean, the fact is that the first 15 minutes were roasting Patrick, and they missed about the 60-footer or whatever he held for an eagle on the par five on seven or six or seven, whichever it was. And so, it's to me that, you know, they're, I know we live in an age where everybody wants to know everything about everybody else. And, you know, you only have to look at Twitter and half the people are for Patrick, half the people are against him, cheating and this and that. It's like, you know what? Hey, leave it alone. Do me a favor, please. It's like, hey, the guy's a great player. I mean, he could have had a four-shot penalty and won it. And I mean, and people say, oh, that's not the point. You know, it's the integrity. And it's like, well, integrity, you know, it's like, read the rule book. I mean, even for example, the shop lady say, oh, well, no, I would have waited and got somebody come over. That's nonsense. I spoke to Maria Fassi's point. She says, I do that all the time. I pick a ball up to see if it's plugged. Okay, so that's what he did. And so, and funny enough, you know, my good friend Mike Hulbert, who sort of works for CBS, he said, I actually went out there and I put my finger in that, and I felt that little indentation there. So, you know, I mean, the rules official, Brad Fable, who's a seasoned rules official, he's not going to let him get away with it. I mean, he's not going to be bullied by Patrick. I mean, hey, they give rulings to everybody out there. So, you know, he did the right thing. The rules official said, you know, so for Brandel to carry on like that, it's pathetic, it's my opinion. I mean, so, you know.
Yeah. It's just, well, I think I was kind of referring to a little bit. I felt like he took a shot a little bit. Not a shot, but just, you know, when Patrick was doing his drills and you know, before he went out and didn't the direction because he's not going to be gaining speed. And, you know, this is a tough thing to change for someone who's won eight times. And, you know,
he certainly showed him, didn't he?
that's what I was going to say. David, that had to feel Patrick wins.
Oh, yeah, from that standpoint. Yeah,
a little bit of
what they call, I don't know if they call it that in America, we call it come-upmanship in Britain, come-upmanship.
Please tell me what that means.
Like, yeah, stick it up, whatever, you know. Because it's like, the fact of the matter is that, because there's Brad will say, why are you going to see David? It's a power game now. It's like, it's not about necessarily power. He's got plenty, you know, he's got enough power, okay? He's not the most powerful guy out there, but he's plenty powerful enough. And, he's probably going to get more powerful because the fact is he's going to be swinging more efficiently. And he's going to be, I mean, as I say, great players have been great iron players historically. And so that's the goal, really, to make him into like an amazing iron player. So it's, you know, I mean, some of that stuff, you know, I mean, you know, Brandel has an opinion and fine, people listen to it. And it's like, you know, but he's talking to, you know, 20 handicappers wouldn't know what he's talking about.
You know, I'll post some of this, but he won't see it because he blocked me a couple years ago from right after I wished him luck at the Senior British Open, and I got blocked. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
My wife says I'm a smart ass. I don't think I am, but maybe I was on Twitter, and that's why I got blocked. Anyway, you know, I'll tell
not
you what.
Not a big loss.
I'll finish with this. If Patrick Reed becomes a top third strokes gained approach player, he's going to win. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think. I mean, he will be. It'll put him in the Hall of Fame because he's got 9 wins and a Masters. So if his putting and short game is, you know, we know it's probably going to continue. If his approach game becomes from here to here, he's going to win 15, 16 times, a couple major championships. Yeah. But that short game, I mean, goodness gracious, he is such a finesse genius.
Yeah. You know, look, we've got him now with we've got stats involved now, and we've sort of shown him, look, if you can do this and this and this, this is what you can achieve. I mean, which is, which I think is great. That's one of the best things with stats, because it shows you what your potential could be if you get to a certain level, right?
Yeah.
And so he's taking it on board. And, it's early days yet, but you don't want to get too carried away. But, I mean, it's very good signs. And the fact is, look, if things carry on like this, I mean, I can only see him getting better and better. I mean, because confidence for a player like him is huge, huge. So if he believes what he's doing is right, and he sees this consistency, more consistency week in and week out, which I think is what he was lacking. Yeah, he's won a lot of tournaments, let's face it, and he's done well. But, I mean, he's done it sometimes the hard way, you know. I mean, even on Augusta, he was sort of leaking oil a little bit, but, you know, short game held him in there. That's great for the future too, because there's going to be times where even when your swing feels great and you're going to come out a certain day, it's not there for whatever reason, right? But it's a challenge, and I've really got to like him in many ways, and his attitude. I mean, our kids at our junior academy, it's like I said, you know what, you have 1/10 of his attitude, you know, you won't believe what you can achieve, not necessarily just in golf, but in life, because everything's all, I can do that. Everything's positive. It's going forward. It's not like, there's no negativity there at all in what he's trying to do. And it's like, you know, the only thing he gets upset with at times when he doesn't perform quite the way he feels he should do. And, you know, so, it's a project. It really is.
It's going to be incredible to watch. I mean, we're going to see him at Genesis, I believe, and then he'll defend the WGC.
He's not going to play. I think he was in Saudi Arabia this week. A few of the guys are playing over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's not playing until, I think, the World Golf Championship.
Okay, so he's
a couple of weeks off, you know. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he'll be in our backyard, WGC.
They've got, obviously, the Florida swing is quite a long one this year. You know,
David, I appreciate it very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you for taking the time.
Keep up the great work, mate. You're doing well.
Let's take a second to talk about the guys and girls over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation of having the most cutting-edge technology in their golf balls that the industry has seen in quite some time. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is changing the script of golf technology through the perimeter-weighted designs, use of high-density particles, and even a nano-transitional layer in their latest creation, which offers players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course and extreme velocity off the tee. They already have their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, but the new Vero X1 is the highest performance ball to date. With their full suit of golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.